May it please the Court, my name is Bianca Prasad, counsel for the appellant, James Guyton. Your Honor, this case is about giving effect to the guidelines crack amendments. A district court cannot simply skip over the analysis of whether an individual defendant is eligible for a resentencing under 3582C2 based on one applicable enhancement.
I understand your argument to be that in many cases, it could be that the career offender sentences are based solely on 4B1.1, but that in some subset of those cases, when the judge is considering a lower sentence, he, in a sense, bases the sentence, he reinstitutes the old guidelines calculation, bases the sentence on that, and you think that's what happened here, since the judge looked back to the non-career sentence.
That's correct, Your Honor. In certain instances, the judge is authorized to disregard what the guidelines would have set under the career offender.
Is part of the general discretion under guidelines, which our corner case has reinforced, to say, actually, I think, you know, a standard guideline sentence is better. Wouldn't that be a very complicated system to sit there once we've got a career offender determination and pick apart to what extent the sentence was, quote, based on the original guidelines?
I don't think that would be a very difficult there are many indications in various records that a district court, the original sentencing court, actually considered various guidelines ranges. For example, in this case, the final sentence is actually squarely within the range that was established by the crack, by the 2D1.1 sentencing range for the crack offense.
But what if instead of being 130 months, this had been a 150-month sentence? Below the career offender range, above the 2D1.1 range.
That would still be an indication that the court had looked at their sentencing range established.
Why not just a discount on the career offender? Why do we think the judge was thinking at all about 2D1.1?
Well, in this case in particular, the judge actually does state in the written judgment that he considered the cooperation motion by the government, but he also cites to mitigating factors not taken into account by the guidelines. And then he sentences the defendant into a range which was actually within the range established by the crack guidelines. Those two factors taken together certainly indicate that the sentencing judge had in his consideration the range established by the crack amendments.
But I thought the only reason that got him down into the crack range was that he had assisted the government.
Correct, Your Honor.
That doesn't have anything to do with the crack, right?
The cooperation itself does not have to do with the crack.
If you give someone a discount for an unrelated reason and it just happens to bring him into the crack range, why should that be a reason for resentencing?
I think that we should note that the mechanism within the guidelines to depart from a guideline range based on cooperation does not actually define in any way the extent of that departure that is appropriate in any particular case. Instead, what a judge has in front of him is the amount of cooperation, the defendant, the offense, and the various guidelines ranges which he has calculated in the process of establishing what the sentencing guidelines range is for a particular defendant.
So you think if the judge has gone through all of that and says, you've cooperated, the government's made its 5K motion, and I'm going to reward you by disregarding the career offender offense level, and I'm going to sentence you within the 2D1.1 range?
Certainly a judge...
I mean, that's not quite what this judge said or...
Correct. And I think that it's important to remember that the records established by the judge at the time of sentencing was not a forward-looking record thinking of the possibility of resentencing at a later date. However, certainly the judge had in front of him and did calculate both the 2D1.1 range and the 4B1.1 range, and then was asked to depart from that range based on cooperation. At that point, the judge had no actual guidance from the guidelines as to the extent of what departure would be appropriate. Instead, the judge is guided by criminal cases and basic criminal principles that state that any defendant's sentence must be appropriate in the particular case. And so the court has in front of it the offense and the defendant and may look at what the guideline has established as an appropriate sentence for defendants sentenced to crack offenses. In this case, there is an indication that the judge did exactly that, looked at the 2D1.1 range that was established, and ultimately decided that the defendant, it was more appropriate for the defendant to fall within that range.
Ms. Prasad, in looking at the guideline provision that's applicable here, 1B1.10, it provides where a defendant is serving a term of imprisonment and this is the key phrase, the guideline range applicable to that defendant has been subsequently lowered. I had been under the impression that that phrase, the guideline range applicable to that defendant, meant the final range properly calculated by the district judge originally.
Now, I don't think that there's any definition in the guideline or in the statute.
What else does that mean?
I think that that means the guideline range, there may not, in fact, be one guideline range in a particular case. For example, in this case, there were two separate guideline ranges that were calculated, and neither one of those was eventually the final guideline range that was applicable to the defendant because of the 5K1.1 motion.
No. The guideline range that applies is the one that applies before you do the downward departures. You know, we're going back before Booker, and the final guideline range here, I thought, was 188 to 235. That's the career guideline range. The final, if when the district judge reports a number to the Sentencing Commission, a range, that's it, right?
Well,
it's the final number before any departures.
I'm not sure that that's entirely true, because 5K1.1 is part of the guidelines. It is within guidelines calculation.
But it doesn't give you a range.
It does not.
The range, the applicable range, is what is determined by going through chapters 1 through 4 before you get into guidelines, isn't it?
Again, I'm not sure that that's entirely true. When there are further considerations beyond, you know, you have established the career offender, the enhancements, and then there are always pre-Booker, there were departures. Those are part of the guideline calculation. The ultimate range is what the sentencing judge determines to be appropriate given
when you depart, you don't go to a range. You just go to a specific number, though, right?
You ultimately choose a specific number. That's correct. However, that number may be guided by the guidelines themselves. In this case, they may have been guided by the 121 months to 151 months range that was established under 2D1.1 rather than the 188-month range that was established by 4B1.1.
What I'm going to point out is that I think that there's a slight difference in wording between 1B1.10A, which is what Judge Hamilton's referring to, just the guideline range applicable to that defendant, and 18 U.S.C. 3582C2, which is in the background materials for that guideline, which says, in the case of a defendant who has been sentenced to a term of imprisonment, here are the key words, based on a sentencing range that has been subsequently lowered. So as I take it, your argument is essentially the statutory one, based on a sentencing range.
Correct. And I think that in either case, the range is always, as is true in this case, it is whether or not that the range, the crack range, which is subsequently amended, was actually something that influenced the sentencing judge. Your Honors, I see my rebuttal time has started, so if I may reserve some time.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Prasad. Mr. Kohler?
May it please the Court, Josh Kohler for FLE, United States of America. Make no mistake about it, the defendant appellant here is clearly asking this Court to overturn two decisions, Jackson and Frohman. Both of those decisions were well-reasoned, and they unambiguously stated that when a defendant is a career offender, the guidelines for career offenders have not been modified, and accordingly, the defendant's sentence falls outside of the class of cases that a district court has jurisdiction to modify.
Well, I don't disagree with you that they're asking us to take another look at those cases. I am not familiar with, or at least I'm pretty sure those cases didn't focus on the, quote, based on argument that counsel is now making. looking at 3582C2, and we had not at the time, I think, decided Horner.
Your Honor, to be clear, the defense original brief does again and again cite to 1B1.0. There is a difference between Section 3582 and 1B1.0, as Your Honor has pointed out.
One of them is a statute, and the other thing is a guideline.
And 3582, Your Honor, to further to what you're saying, that establishes the jurisdiction. And the court here never had jurisdiction, and it cited two.
Well, but if we think that that somehow or another, once all this happened, Mr. Guyton's sentencing range was based on somehow the 2D1.1 calculations, then there might be some traction. If we really don't think it was ever based on that, and the judge just thought it was kind of interesting that this is where 2D1.1 came out, but he was really starting with the career offender and just figuring out what kind of discount for the 5K motion, then it wasn't based on. You know, but it's not a frivolous argument.
Respectfully, Your Honor, I do. Everything in what you just said, obviously, is completely accurate. But what makes this case one where the appellant is trying to overturn those two cases
We can always do that. If we need
to. Yes, Your Honor. And there is nothing in this case to suggest that 2D1.1 was the operative guideline. First, we are operating in a pre-Booker world at the original sentencing, and the guidelines were mandatory. The two reasons that the defendant appellant points out to somehow suggest that 2B1.1 may have been applicable here is, first, that the district court calculated both the career offender guidelines and the 2D1.1 guidelines. That's going to be true in every single case because that's the method that a district court must still do when dealing with the career offender, because it needs to determine the appropriate guidelines, and part of that calculation is determine which of those guidelines are higher. The other rationale that the defendant appellant has put forth for why the 2D1.1 guidelines may have come into play is that the ultimate sentence was in the 2D1.1 guidelines. And that falls for two reasons. One, the ultimate sentence here was exactly what the government asked for in its 5K1.1 motion. So the district court did not independently say, I have two guidelines here. We now have a situation where the government has made the appropriate motion. We're under the guidelines. I can go below, and I'm going to 2D1.1. That's not what happened at all. The district court calculated the guideline range in its judgment. It said the guideline range determined by this court, and it listed the guideline range for career offender. That's in page 10 of the appendix.
Did the government offer a reason for its recommendation, or did it just pull it out of a hat?
The government offered the substantial assistance. That remains under seal, I believe.
But the substantial assistance. Did the government say, we think that this 130-month sentence is the right sentence just because we threw a dart at the wall, or did they say because it's, you know, what it would have been without the career offender, or?
Your Honor did not mention what it would be without the career offender. I believe it was an actual calculation of a certain number of levels off of the...
Levels down from the career offender.
Yes, Your Honor. It cited, I believe, to offense level 27, which would have been a four-level departure. I don't have that right in front of me, but I know it cited to a new
and
offense level.
And you
don't
level. Know why you thought four levels was the right amount?
Your Honor, there was an analysis of the assistance when the assistance occurred, how helpful it was. I don't have all that in front of me, and I believe it does remain under seal, but I know that it, and I believe it was a four level and two offense level 27. Without it in front of me, I'm not 100% sure. I do remember that it had a specific offense level tied to the departure, and that offense level, of course, was working off of the career offender guideline. So since the applicable guideline was career offender, and there's nothing in the record to suggest that the district court found 2D1.1 applicable or sentenced based on 2D1.1, the only way for this court to accept the defendant's argument would, I believe, be to completely undermine, if not overrule, Jackson and Foreman. And it would create, I think, a really untenable situation, and one that, especially in pre-Booker cases, would really be contrary to what we know the district court judges were doing. They were calculating the applicable guideline when the career offender guidelines applied. They were bound to those guidelines, and when a 5K1.1 motion is in there, that doesn't automatically suggest that the 2D1.1 guidelines is where the district court was looking to.
Okay, well, thank you very much. Mr. Kohler and Ms. Prasad, would you like another minute? You have anything pressing?
First, I would like to note that as far as overturning Jackson and Foreman decisions, actually neither of those cases specifically spoke to an issue in which a career offender had a departure motion. In the Foreman decision, actually, there was a career offender who was subject to the mandatory minimum and was asking under a 3582 resentencing to go below that. And then in the Jackson decision, the defendant was actually subject to the career offender and was sentenced within the career offender. So neither of those cases is necessarily controlling, and suggesting that those cases are controlling is an overly broad rule that treats all career defendants subject to a career offender enhancement as categorically barred, when in actuality not all of those defendants are similarly situated. Also, the counsel for the government noted that this was a pre-Booker guideline in which the career offender was mandatory. However, the 5K motion made that level no longer mandatory. Instead, it changed the level into something anywhere between 0 and 235 months. And if the court has no further questions, thank you.
Okay, well, thank you very much. And you were appointed, were you not?
Yes, the Northern District.
So, we thank you very much for your efforts on behalf of the court.